B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Lots to get to with my old friend Jesse James Dupree from Jackal today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast, including what do the guys have going on now?
Well, that's just a track that we did with DMC.
Okay.
And then I've got a live Jackal album and DVD, if you will, a live concert recorded.
We talk about his other band, Dixie Inc., as well as his relationship with Brian Johnson from AC/DC, which he brought up. Oh, by the way, what's going on with AC/DC? Does Jesse know?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And that's all you're going to say. All right. Fair enough.
It's not my business.
He tells me the best advice his father ever gave him, as well as advice he's given his kids. And oh, by the way, why did he get naked on stage at Woodstock 94?
Well, the reason I got naked at Woodstock was it's a total selfish reason.
It's Jesse James Dupree from Jackal. Then a special encore presentation of an interview I did with John Cooper from Skillet, all today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Thank you, as always, for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Trying to bring a little bit of a normalcy to your life during this very strange time. Trying to entertain and inform, give you guys some fun interviews to listen to. Coming up second, it's John Cooper from Skillet with an interview I did with him this past, Monday, right? Anyways, days kind of start to run together. John's so great. He did this interview with us via our Instagram page, and you could watch it and everything else. And I thought, you know what? The audio is so good. I'll give you a chance to check that out coming up here in just a bit. But first, it's my old friend Jesse James Dupree. I've known Jesse since 1992, probably the guy I've known the longest in this business. We've broke bread and shared many a shot and a drink together, and Jesse's just a great guy. I can't say enough good things about him. And when I contacted him and said, "Hey man, you want to hop on the podcast? Let everybody know what's going on." He was more than happy to do so. So I got to thank Jesse for coming on. Real fast, if you like this podcast, 5-star ratings and reviews and stuff on iTunes and Apple are always really appreciated. And we talk about a lot of stuff here with Jesse. And just fun to reminisce and go back and talk about how this whole thing got started. And so without further ado, let's get right at it. My old friend, Jesse James Dupree, today on Talkin' Rock.
You just swinging hard in quarantine, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It's funny because I posted that picture the other day of me swinging that chainsaw. You would have thought I was a secondary member of the band the way I was using that thing. Clearing out brush and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Who would have thought you could have sold a couple of million records for that, huh?
That is funny. I thought about you over the weekend. I thought, Jesse's got to see this because I'm just like, you know, manhandling this chainsaw and, you know. Hey, by the way, what you probably answered this a million times. You might have even answered for me before, but like, what was your impetus to even use a chainsaw in the first place?
Well, we held a sales in attendance record at a place called Charlie Magruder's in Atlanta. Jackal used to play there all the time, and we held the record for the sales in attendance, and we would go in there and just pack it out, make that guy all kinds of money. And he was a very excitable club owner. His name was Butch Weaver. And he had a couple of heart attacks. He wouldn't stop doing cocaine. He was a Vietnam vet, and the guy had just an incredible history about him. He was tough as nails. And but very excitable. And so I used to threaten him and tell him I was going to bring a chainsaw in there one night and cut it up because the place was just all wood. It was actually a beautiful cherry wood. I mean, had a lot of nice woodwork around the bar. Had one of those bars that had the glass rack things that hang down, you know, from the roof down.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to bring a chainsaw in here and cut this place up one night. So I went and rented a chainsaw, went by Walmart, and I got some mailbox letters and wrote the name of the band, stuck them on the blade and spelled out the name of the band. And I carried it in, and I was cutting things up, and he was losing his damn mind and telling me he was going to fine us $300 for this and $200 for that. And at the end of the night, the guitar players were jamming around and taking lead breaks and noodling around. And we were doing a version of Jimi Hendrix, The Red House. There's a red house over yonder. Oh, that's what my baby stays. Okay, kind of a Jimi Hendrix type of version of an old standard blues progression. And they were taking their lead breaks. And I thought, well, hell, I'm going to take one too. So I took one on the chainsaw. And I thought, Yeah, that was fun. And my dad happened to be in the audience that night. And my dad, you know, tells me the next day, he says, you know, you need to keep doing that chainsaw thing. And I said, yeah, whatever. So I carried it back to the tool rental place and forgot about it. And about 2 weeks later, my dad shows up in South Carolina in a car. And I'm going, why is he in a car? Because he always rode his Harley. And you very hardly ever saw him in a car. And he shows up in the car and he opens up the trunk and he had bought me a chainsaw. And so I had the thing laying around for a while. And then whenever we got signed, John Claude, I'd pull it out and cut things up during the shows and I'd mess around with it, but I wasn't really playing anything with it. But it was enough that John Claude for the record company goes, you got to keep doing that. You know, go ahead and, you know, write a song around it. So on the way back to South Carolina to play a show several months later, I wrote the Lumberjack song in my head on the way up to a gig and started singing it that night, and the rest is history.
So where did the Lumberjack song come in as far as writing? Was the other stuff on the record already written, or was it kind of in the middle, or was it
no,
the last song?
No. We all of it got recorded. So we had not recorded the record yet.
Okay.
John said he wanted to hear every song that we'd ever written. So we worked up every single song we'd written and he came in, him and Brendan O'Brien, who produced the first record, came in and we did a pre-production and they picked the tracks that they liked. And we went in the studio and we actually recorded the first album at Rumbo Recorders, which was owned by the Captain and Tennille.
Mm.
And if you remember the Captain and Tennille, but Appetite for Destruction was recorded there, and Girls, 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 some of the Motley Crue Girls, Girls, Girls record was recorded there. And when we were there recording at the same time, the Traveling Wilburys were right across the hall from us, and Ted Nugent and the Damn Yankees were right down the hall.
Wow.
And there were three studios in this building, and so at the end of the night, whenever the Traveling Wilburys would get wrapped up and leave, I would go in and play George Harrison's guitars.
Really?
Yeah, that's where I saw my first Beatle. I was running down, I saw a Beatle.
That's so kick-ass, man. That is unbelievable. So Damn Yankees, Traveling Wilburys, and an unknown band named Jackal all recording in this studio, eh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is so
and
cool.
We went up north of Los Angeles and we bought some chickens. And we carried about 40 chickens, and we carried them back down to the studio. And Ted Nugent had been shooting a bow and arrow into bales of hay out behind the studio. And we took some of his bales. We took a couple of bales of his hay, and we strutted around the studio. And we had the chickens and such, and we just cut them loose out in the main room. So while we were recording, there were chickens and, you know, running around in the studio. And and if you listen to the end of the Lumberjack, when yeah. I throw the chainsaw down and you hear me going, yeah, and you hear they were really in the studio.
You know, I never knew that you guys recorded that on the West Coast. It just has that kind of deep Southern vibe to it, you know?
Well, that's why Wing got the chickens and put in there because it felt like California does too, and we didn't like it.
Yeah.
So we went and got the bales of hay and the chickens and
I think there's an old story that, what's his name, Buckethead that played with Guns N' Roses for that Chinese Democracy wouldn't record unless they got chickens in the studio. Did you ever hear that?
I never heard that. Yeah. I don't know that guy.
He's the guy that plays guitar with that Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket on his head.
Good for him. That's good. Good for I like him already.
So I posted that blog earlier this week because I've been doing one every single day and kind of reliving some rock stories and stuff. And I thought about, you know, the Lumberjack and stuff and playing that, you know, in Buffalo. And just it just blew up. The phone lines went bananas. Of course, like I mentioned in the article, when your boss throws you a record and says, play something else off this, and you hear a guy playing a chainsaw, you have to play it, I suppose, right?
Well, you put your finger right on it because that thing broke wide open after that. And that was, you know, I Stand Alone was the first single, which did really great. And then the Lumberjack song. And they were actually going to go with Down on Me was going to be the second single. And then you kind of screwed that up. So then they went ahead and went with the Lumberjack. And then they came back with Down on Me and then When Will It Rain and Dirty Little Mind. And there was a lot of singles off that first record.
Now, when you were living it during that time in 1992, could you feel the buzz around the band? Because growing up in Western New York and hearing, you know, first of all, I Stand Alone was such a killer song. And of course, you had done that restaurant thing when you signed the record label and you carved your name into the top of that table. And there was a big buzz around the band. And this was before the internet and everything. But could you feel it in the band that you guys were really starting to make some waves?
Well, that wasn't just a big buzz. That was a lawsuit when we went into that restaurant with a chainsaw and surprised all those radio industry heavyweight program directors and consultants. And we freaked them out. And there was 300 other people in the restaurant eating. It was a Longhorn Steakhouse, and they were all eating lunch. And we obviously disrupted the day and ended up in a class action lawsuit. They you know, cost us $1 million right off the bat. We hadn't even sold the first record, and we were $1 million in. but you know, yeah, I mean, we could tell that there was something happening. There was just so much happening at once. I mean, we were out on tour with the Damn Yankees for a while, and then we ended up out on the road with Aerosmith for about 2 years, and which was an absolute amazing, you know, way to make your entry into, because they were on fire at that time. And we were, Joe Perry was the one that kept us out there. I mean, Joe Perry was responsible for us spending all that time on the road with Aerosmith. He felt like we made them have to work, is what he told me, which was a big compliment, huge compliment for Joe Perry to say that he felt like, you know, that having us hit the stage and we had such a good buzz and such an energy about us, he felt like that it kind of leveraged them to take their A game to the stage. And for somebody like Joe Perry to say that to you, it's a huge compliment.
Yeah, it's cool how many like heavyweights and celebrities you were kind of surrounded by back in the day that I'm sure you grew up idolizing. I mean, Nugent and Joe Perry and, I mean, George Harris. I mean, just ridiculous, huh?
Yeah, and, then, of course, working with ZZ Top, we toured with ZZ and Billy Gibbons. I was a huge fan of Billy Gibbons. I think he's the greatest guitarist ever. And then of course, to become friends with Brian Johnson from AC/DC and then write songs with him and record songs. And, you know, we're the only band anybody in AC/DC's ever recorded, you know, outside of the band with. And so that was really cool to do those, you know, that stuff with Brian. And then, you know, he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And on the other end of the spectrum, so is DMC from Run DMC. And, you know, we just got through, not even right before the coronavirus thing hit, we just got through tracking a brand new song with D.
Really?
So we got another Jackal DMC collaboration that's in the can that nobody's heard yet.
No kidding. So how much stuff do you have ready for a new record?
Well, that's just a track that we did with DMC.
Okay.
And then I've got a live Jackal album and DVD, if you will, live concert recorded that we did at the Midland Theater in December. 3,000 people sold out. It was an incredible venue, incredible night. And one of those nights where the crowd just, it sings every word to every song. It was just a lot of fun. And so we're editing that down now and hopefully going to get that out in the next month or so. And hopefully in the next month we'll be able to get that released. And then there's also a country project that I've got called Dixie Inc. that I've been touring around, you know, Jesse James Dupree and Dixie Inc. is what I've been billing that as. You can go on YouTube and look up Jesse James Dupree and Dixie Inc. And there's a song called It Didn't Fall from the Sky. And actually you should pull it up on YouTube. You should play a piece of it. It's a tribute to the truck. It's a couple of tributes in one. It's a tribute to the truckers, the supply chain heroes that are out there, you know, keeping the groceries and the medical supplies moving right now in the middle of this pandemic. And so it's a tribute song to them, but it's also a tribute to the great 70s trucker songs. You remember Jerry Reed, Eastbound and Down?
Yeah.
And I got the legendary Don Wayne Reno playing banjo on this track. But you can find it on YouTube. I just put it up as a sneak peek, but it goes live on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff a week from this coming Friday.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people that don't know you like I do, it's like, you know, you're a busy guy and you like to keep things rolling. And it's so cool that you're doing this. So It Didn't Fall from the Sky. Okay, I was going to ask you about Dixie Inc. But first, let's get back to this DMC thing. So you actually wrote another track with those guys. Tell me what's it called. I mean, what kind of flavor it is and when are we going to be able to hear that?
It's called the Country Song.
Okay.
But it's not country. It's basically just celebrating that music pulls people together. And that tends to be a theme when we work together, because people are always so surprised that Jackal and DMC, you know, Jackal being from the Deep South and DMC being from the New York and, you know, the father of, you know, that hip hop with and rock mixed together and stuff. And I don't know, it's just a strange pairing, but yet it works. And I mean, he's just such a great guy. He's the sweetest guy, man. Just I love him to death, and turned out to be just a great friend. And we enjoy working together. He came in, we literally set up in a room and wrote the song on the fly.
Hmm. Now, you talked about Dixie Inc. Now, if I'm not mistaken, before this whole quarantine and the virus and stuff broke, you were going to be playing some shows with those guys going around the country, right?
Yeah, and I was. And I got to. I'm going to back up to the DMC thing real quick and tell you that we actually talk about Detroit in the song.
Oh, you do? Really? Okay.
Yeah, so we talk about, so Detroit's mentioned in the song. So you have to. It's not out yet, and we're sitting on it for right now. But because we want to do a video and stuff with D. But as far as Dixie Inc., my country band is. We went out and did about 2 weeks worth of dates a couple of months ago. That went over really great. And, you know, Jackal's just a country band turned up to 12.
Right.
And, you know, I'm enjoying doing the Dixie Inc. thing too. It's challenging for me because I get to sing in a whole different register. And if you go to YouTube and check out, you know, the song "It Didn't Fall from the Sky" by Jesse James Dupri and Dixie Inc. is what it's listed under. And if you go check that out, you'll hear, you know, I'm just using a different part of my voice that I've enjoyed the challenge of doing it.
Hmm. So what have you been doing now with the quarantine and the virus and stuff? I mean, obviously, you know, you talked about doing some songs and different things like that. But I mean, what else can you share with us?
Well, I mean, I've obviously got the Jesse James bourbon, so I've been staying on top of that. A lot of people going to the liquor stores and picking up the Jesse James bourbon.
Yeah, right.
And it's been cool because they've also, you know, it's been a cool way for, you know, when people can't go to the bars, they end up experimenting and finding different stuff. So they're not just finding the Jesse James bourbon, they're finding the honey bourbon, the Jesse James honey and the spice bourbons. You know, I got the different flavors. And the Devil's cinnamon whiskey is really, really catching on as well. It's a little hotter than my competition on the cinnamon whiskey. And so if you get a chance, check out the Devil's Devil because it'll light you up.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like it more than your competition. I told you that before. I think it's great. I don't drink a lot of that that kind of stuff, but that was that really good stuff. But yeah, your whiskey. I mean, so I was just going to ask you some like random questions, and one of them was going to be like, what are your biggest obstacles starting the bourbon brand and, you know, continuing onward?
Well, I mean, you know, it's been out for 6 years plus now,
right,
and been doing great. We're about 150,000-160,000 cases sold.
Yeah.
So it's really doing great. And you don't have to take out a second mortgage to buy a bottle.
I mean, right.
You know, it's affordable and it's great bourbon.
No, it's really good. I know here in Michigan, they got some really screwed up laws and stuff as far as that kind of stuff is concerned. But in other states, it's probably a little bit more relaxed and probably a little bit easier to get your stuff on the shelves, eh?
Well, Michigan was a little tougher to get in, but I mean, not as tough as, say, a state like Pennsylvania or New York.
Okay.
I mean, Pennsylvania or North Carolina. Those two are probably the two hardest states that I know of.
Yeah. You mentioned AC/DC and Brian Johnson a little while ago. I mean, do you still keep tabs? You still talk with Brian? And do you have any idea? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but do you have any idea what they're doing?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And that's all you're going to say. All right. Fair enough.
It's not my business.
I knew you were going to say that. I just had to throw it out there and see what you had to say. That's all.
but I'm a huge fan. And in addition to being good friends with Brian, and if I want to keep being good friends with Brian, I keep my damn mouth shut. So they're very close-lipped bunch. You know, they when it's time to make a move and do something, they do it. And I love Brian, and he's been such an influence and such a friend. And, you know, he's such a role model because, I mean, he's the biggest band in the world, you know, in AC/DC, and he'll come stay at the house and we go out to eat. And there's no bodyguards. There's, you know, he's so disarming. I mean, people come up and say, oh, they recognize who he is or whatever. And he's just such, you know, such a great role model because, you know, he just respects everybody. And it's just, I love being out with him and stuff. And I'm just so proud of the person that he is. And I say that because, you know, so many of the people that you grow up, you know, idolizing and that are influences, you know, you meet them and you go, God, what an asshole, you know? And, but you don't, you know, he's luckily, I hadn't really said that about too many people. I mean, I've had great experiences with people that I grew up, you know, being influenced by, but definitely Brian is an incredible role model and just a great man.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I say it all the time. It's like I think 98% of the people I've met in this business that I've grown up listening to or I've, you know, played on the radio or, you know, have come onto the scene since I've been on the radio, I think are fantastic people. There's so many people that I really like.
Well, you know, when you have success, especially, you know, we got lucky enough to have success whenever the music business was fat and happy and limousines and women coming at you in threes and everything else. And, you know, when all that happens to you, I believe every person comes to a crossroads, you know, where they have to make a cognizant decision. Am I going to believe my own BS, or am I going to be realistic about this and not let it consume me, you know?
Yeah.
I always reflect back to, you know, to what my mom would do if she saw me acting a certain way. Shit, I never wanted to act to somebody to the point where my mom would flog me, right? So, jerk a nod in my ass and say, "Boy, what are you doing?" So, I was raised with great parents, and we appreciate the fact that people give us a minute to check out what we're doing. We've had 10 lives in Jackal, and we're still going. I mean, everything's. There, you know, the whole band's with me right here today. We're in the studio right now.
Nice. So speaking of your parents and stuff, what's the greatest advice your dad ever gave you, and what do you think is a great piece of advice you've given your kids?
My dad was blue collar. I mean, he doesn't have a 10th grade education. It's so crude. But I'll tell you what my dad's advice to me was, and it's crude. But is, you don't ask to wear another man's leather. You don't ask to ride another man's Harley. And you don't sleep with another man's wife.
All good advice.
You don't wear his leathers. You don't ride his bike. And you don't fuck his wife. And that's the things my dad told me. So,
you know, it's funny is, you've talked to me about different stories about your dad and stuff. And I never met your dad, but he reminds me of like Uncle Jesse from the Dukes of Hazzard. That's like the kind of the mental image I have of him in my head.
No, it's more like, have you ever stepped back and wonder who Satan falls to his knees? Who does Satan fall to his knees and beg for forgiveness from? You ever think who's the one that Satan falls to his knees and begs for forgiveness? It would be my dad.
Nice.
I mean, my dad is all hell. I mean, you don't even know.
What about when it comes to your kids? I know, you know, your son, obviously, people probably know Nigel is a musician as well. What kind of advice you give them?
Nigel is just, God, man, he's what a great man he's turned out to be. I couldn't be a more proud father. And, you know, I get wound up because I've raised three beautiful, responsible citizens, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, people comment on what a gentleman Nigel is, and he looks like his mama, so he's absolutely a beautiful kid. And then I got two daughters, one's 17 and the other's 28. And I look at people all the time, and they want to get hung up on, you know, they want to get hung up on all these social issues and laws and gun laws and just all this stuff. And there's so many points and problems that the government's trying to figure out that really is just solved by one issue. And that is, are you raising responsible citizens? Mm. Because, you know, because if you raise your kids right, then you don't have to worry about any of that other stuff. I mean, you could put grenades and machine guns in my kids' hands, and they're not going to hurt nobody because they're responsible citizens. So it's not the guns; it's the dummies that are behind them, and just raising your kids right. And I just picked the gun thing as an example, but I mean, whatever. I mean, just putting them out in society to work with other people or to help other people out and be, you know, socially conscious. I mean, here I am, you know. A rock and roll singer in a band, and Lord knows I've had my share of run-ins with the law and everything else with indecent exposure and different things that we've done over the years in the band. But at the end of the day, I've raised some damn good kids. And that's the biggest contribution you can make in your life is to play it forward and raise some good kids.
So you mentioned it right there, the indecent exposure. I mean, you know, Woodstock, you're playing naked with the chainsaw, if I remember correctly. And there was all sorts of stuff back in the early 90s. Do you regret any of that stuff, or was it all just part of the show, part of you putting yourself out there and trying to really make this band pop?
You know, the reason I got naked at Woodstock was it's a total selfish reason. I was standing out in front of a platform on the side of the stage in front of the PA. That they had a 40 foot square screen mm-hmm. where they were broadcasting the show up on, and a half a million people in front of us.
I think I already where this is going.
and I thought to myself, I have an opportunity right now for my penis to be 10 foot long. And because all I've got to do is drop my pants and it's going to be 10 foot long across the top of this. And I thought, what man would not love to have a 10 foot long penis? So I had to take advantage of that. And I can say that I actually had a 10-foot penis for a minute.
As soon as you said that, I knew exactly where you were going. So yeah. So I guess you don't regret any of it, huh?
You know, I can't sit and split hairs and go back. I've just been, again, blessed to have been able to walk down the pathway of a lot of greats as far as having success in the music business, and I'm not through. I don't even want to stop and think about it, if you know the truth, because I don't want it to go away. I'm afraid. I wake up every day having anxiety, you know, thinking that it's all been a dream anyway. And as soon as I realized that it hadn't been a dream, I jump up and make the most out of every day.
And that's probably where you get your work ethic from, because I'm kind of the same way. It's like, man, I can't even believe I've been doing this for 30 years. I got to keep it going. So I get up every day and pound the pavement, a lot like you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, by all rights, I'm really just qualified to be pouring concrete today, you know, I mean, it's, and I get away with so much. And so I'm just going to keep getting away with it as long as I can.
I texted Matt Dorito the other day because my boss, JT, said that years ago he was on stage that you played a couple songs on your guitar with you. And then Matt Dorito jumped up on stage. And I guess he at one point had taken your chainsaw, you had given it to him or whatever. I said to Matt, I said, so do you remember that night? He goes, of course I remember. He goes, that's the night right after I got out of jail. So, you know, Matt's such a good guy. You remember that? And I think it was probably in Grand Rapids, right?
Yeah, it was Grand Rapids. You know, we got so much history. And JT was, you know, one of very few people that's ever been up there playing with us like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, listen, Jesse, anything that we missed, anything you want to plug, anything you want to push other than what we did? It didn't fall from the sky, of course, with your Dixie Ink and all the other kind of stuff. You got anything else you're working on or anything else we should mention?
You know, just follow me on Jesse James Dupree's Instagram and the Jackal official Instagrams and Facebook pages and keep up with where we are, and hopefully I'll get back up to Michigan soon enough, man. I appreciate your meltdown, and congratulations, brother, on continuing to keep the damn fight going and spreading the rock and roll. I appreciate you.
Well, there's a lonely stretch, asphalt heat. There's an 18-wheeler 75 foot long with a hero in the seat. Can't shut down, hear the diesel roar. He followed his daddy like his daddy before, grounding out those miles with a hammer down, pulling on the floor. And he lives a life he can never understand, but there's food on your table. He's a trucking Uncle Sam. Back, chicken, tea, and hard gifts, counting 18 wheels, 80,000 pounds, stacking.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Up next on the Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast, it's lead singer John Cooper from the band Skillet. And I did this interview this past Monday over our Instagram, our WRIF Instagram. And it's really cool to be able to do this. I've got a couple more coming up as I record this on Wednesday. Coming up on Thursday, which would be April 30th, I'll be talking with Lee from Pop Evil, as well as the guys from Dinosaur Pileup. You can follow us, like I said, on the WRIF Instagram. Mine is up at WRIF Meltdown. But anyways, I'm not great with this technology and stuff, and I did end up finally getting in contact with John Cooper from Skillet, and here's what it sounded like today on Talking Rock.
There he is.
What's up?
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Wow, that's very close to me. Let me scoot back. You didn't screw it up. We're here.
All right. You can hear me, huh?
I can hear you. I heard you say, oh, man, I screwed it up.
No, I'm not real good with this stuff. And, you know, but it's really cool, this, you know, what we're doing here. It's funny because I shaved today because I thought I hadn't shaved all week. And I thought to myself, you know, with John in there and me not shaving, that would be just too much testosterone. So you'll do the only bearded one today. So.
Yeah, you don't want too much. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Just enough.
You look like you've been keeping your workout going, though. Your arms look huge.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, just, you know, it's been, what are you going to do? You know? I mean, you got to do something, right?
You're either going to eat a whole lot or you're going to exercise a whole lot, or maybe both, I guess. You can do both.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so you've been keeping pretty busy doing with all the stuff that's going on. You got your podcast up and running. You've been doing videos and stuff online, quarantining. And if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I've heard this before, you do homeschool your kids anyway. So this is kind of not that different for what you normally do, right?
Yeah. Now I need to be clear about this. I don't homeschool our kids because that's not going to happen. And my kids would not turn out to be good, smart people. But we've always homeschooled our kids because we're always on the road. So, you know, because obviously Corey plays in the band too. So in certain ways, no, they're just finishing up their school. In fact, my daughter graduates this year, but she's just finishing up her school as she always does. You know, it still has some strange effects in the fact that we're stuck at home and you're not able to like work and that, but my kids are still doing their school. And for me, I've enjoyed some of the normal things in life, like eating dinner at the table with my family. You know what I mean? It's like normal stuff. I mean, you know, going to a grocery store, with a mask, but still, you know.
Yeah, you can just pull your beard up.
Yeah, my mask only goes to here, so I need to get a bigger mask, like a longer one, you know?
No, that's great. Yeah, it's like, this is just such a crazy time, but I've talked about this with other bands, like I had Tyler from Theory of a Deadman on here the other day, and guys along, you know, David Ellefson and whatnot, and it's like, it's so weird, and it's like, nowadays, you know, back when we were kids growing up, you know, you had to just imagine what your favorite rock stars were doing. And now they're taking you in their home and showing you what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of a weird time.
It is a weird time. Yeah. I probably have said this to you before, but if I had the ability to see what Tommy Lee was doing every day, I probably never would have left my house. You know, I mean, like, what's Ozzy up to today? Find out what Ozzy and Nikki Sixx are doing, like their little, you know, like in the dirt, you know, we got Ozzy and Nikki Sixx doing their little game of snorting ants, I believe. I'm pretty sure it was ants they were snorting.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a very different time. The bad side of it, if you will, is that we missed that kind of mystery. You know, the mystery of the rock star, like you never know what their lives must be like. And in a certain way, it was kind of cool because it made it more rock star-y.
Right.
But the cool thing about this is in a certain way, in my view, it kind of makes it more about the music. You know, it's more like the it's not really about rock stardom. It's about the songs and it's about what's behind the songs. And I think that people can get a very authentic look at that because of all this social media stuff. And I think that's a really cool, it's a trade-off. I prefer this because I like the authenticity, but you do lose a little bit of the mystery of not knowing what Nikki Sixx was up to at, you know, at noon, what he had for lunch, you know?
Yeah, well, we saw
apparently
enough of Nikki
Sixx. I don't know. Yeah,
we saw enough of Nikki Sixx in that video at the end of the 1990s, but we don't need to see any more from Nikki. I mean, well, that's Tommy. I'm sorry, Tommy, but yeah, that's true.
Probably true.
But yeah, but it's weird because, like, in a strange way, we're farther apart than ever, but closer than ever. Kind of strange.
Yeah, very, very interesting psychological experiments for people who are into that sort of thing. I imagine there will be social science books written about this time because it's like alone together. You know, we can see each other, but we're actually not together. And there's maybe some good parts of that it helps you psychologically realize that human beings, whether you see them or not, we're not really all that different. But then the bad side of that is that, you know, we're created to want community and to need person-to-person contact. And you become very closed off if you don't do that. So I'm sure there will be some very interesting social science, you know, stuff written about this in years to come.
Now, speaking of books, I know that you like to read and whatnot. What have you been reading lately?
Oh, I love to read. Actually, this is my bookcase. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I actually built that bookcase with my own two hands.
Really?
All right. Yeah, I did. I enjoy carpentry. I'm not that good of a carpenter, but I enjoy it. But yeah, I've been reading a ton. I read this. Actually, I got it right here. Look at this. I read this amazing book, social science, actually called Charles Murray. The name of the book is Coming Apart.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. Social science. It's about the reason that there seems to be such a huge disparity between classes in America and stuff like that, how that has happened and how that continues to happen from a social science perspective. I enjoyed that. I read Animal Farm. I'd never read Animal Farm. It's one of those books that you either read when you're in school or you learn about it in school. So you learn so much about the book. Like, why would you read the book? It's one of those.
Right.
But I finally got to read it, and it's really awesome. It's kind of like it's warning you about the dangers of communism and stuff like that. But it's fantastic. It's kind of fun, except that there's a real darkness underneath to it that it's pretty awesome. I really enjoyed that. That was a good one.
I'm a slow reader, I should say. I sometimes tend to, you know, veg out in front of the TV or listen to records or do whatever.
Sure.
But anyways, I'm kind of reading that book, Neil Peart, Ghost Rider, from back in the early 2000s. Did you read that one? You know what that's about?
No, I do not. Mm.
So Neil, after his wife and his daughter had both passed away, he took this like 50,000 mile motorcycle ride, and it's kind of like his journal about it. It's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So anyways, after he passed away, you know, back in January, I'd heard about that book before, but I'm like, I got to check this out because, you know, Neil was so like well-written and well-spoken and everything. And it's like, he's really descriptive and you can imagine him on his motorcycle doing all sorts of things. So if you're
That's
looking for something a little bit different.
Oh, I like that. That's interesting.
Yeah. But speaking of turntables, so I tweeted at you the other day and you responded, you were listening to Foghat or something. So
yeah.
So have you got bit by the vinyl bug now or what?
Yes, slow ride. I love it. Take it easy. I mean, that song is such a hit. Have you noticed that Slow Ride, like, no one knows how the rest of the song goes. It's just the chorus. And it's such a hit chorus that not only did they start the song with the chorus,
right,
they started the song with a double chorus. I mean, it goes, you know, it's like, slow ride, take it easy, slow ride. And then they add the harmony and slower. I'm like, that's when you know you have a hit chorus. Anyway, all that to say, you know, I've always loved vinyl. And when I moved about 7 years ago, my record player got destroyed in the move. And I'd been planning on buying a new one since then, 6 years. So I just never got around to it. And so for my birthday, my wife got me a new record player. And so my drummer, Jen, got me a couple of records. And I think it's because at dinner time, because we're having dinner together. I just said earlier, right? We're all having dinner together, and my in-laws live with me too. And so I was like, hey, I'll put on some music, and I just got a Foghat. I don't know why I wanted to listen to Foghat. So Jen was laughing at me about it, so she got me Foghat, which is awesome. So vinyl just sounds good because it's got that natural distortion to it. You know, everything's like crammed and distorted. I love it.
Well, I really like it because you put the record on and you walk away, and it kind of, you know, all the songs should be at least theoretically placed there by the artist for a purpose and for a reason. And that's why, right, I like to listen to it all the way through.
I know exactly what you mean. You know, records used to be made like that. Not telling you, but you know this.
Yeah.
But records used to be made to where it was maybe more like a concert, like when you put on a concert.
Journey.
Yeah, you got to have ebb and flow, and you don't want the same. And then at some point, probably in the late 90s, albums began to be really more about the single. And so then you're just stacking all the best songs up front because people didn't have to flip over to the other side. But back then, you needed a good song to start and to finish each side. And that I always loved that, like Def Leppard, Hysteria, Gods of War. You flip it over, and Gods of War sounds like it could be the opening track on an album because it kind of is, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's just the philosophy of record making, but I miss that because oftentimes it would be the radio song is the reason I would listen to the band. But after about four or five spins, I'm like, oh, I like the rest of the record better than the single, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how it used to be.
So you mentioned your birthday. So your birthday was just a couple weeks ago. So what was it like celebrating your birthday? By the way, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
how was it celebrating your birthday this year?
It's kind of strange, you know? Tell you the truth, we had an amazing day. It was the only day that was in the 70s. Mm. In Wisconsin for the entire year so far. I don't know what happened. It was like a miracle. It was like miracle day. And that was kind of amazing. You know, it's such a strange time. The one good part of it for me is that it has been, you know, when you want to, if the glass is half full or is the glass half empty, if you're looking at it in an optimistic way, it's kind of a forced slowdown time for me. Now, the scary part is that you're slowing down. You can't work. There's no income. And I've got, you know, 12 employees and all of that. The good side of it is that you're forced to be home, and it makes you think about the things that matter, you know, the things that you care about. And so I got to spend my birthday not on the road and not with tons of other fans, which is also awesome. But now I got to just hang out with my kids and my wife, and my drummer Jen came over, and my in-laws, and it was just like our little group of, what was it, 9 people, not over 10, 9 people. And in a certain way, I think it's kind of special. I don't know if that's cheesy or not, but sometimes when you're on the road, you're around so many people that to find that time to just be alone with the people you love, you kind of covet that time. And that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying exactly, because, you know, you're constantly out there with the fans and, you know, obviously in the theaters and on tour and, you know, other bands and stuff like that. And every once in a while, you just kind of want to step back and take it all in and just be with a few people. And it's probably pretty nice for you this year.
Yeah, I think it was kind of interesting, you know, and luckily we all get along really well. I guess it wouldn't be so good if we didn't, but I'm enjoying that time, getting to watch some films with my kids and read some books. And we get to talk about, you know, what we're reading with the kids. And it's that part of it has been really nice. But I do think that underneath, of course, is the, when is this going to change? What is it going to look like? But that's, for me also, I'm a very optimistic person. So on the optimist side, that is also a chance to get to teach my kids that you prepare the best you can in life, but there are no guarantees. You know, just when you think you got everything figured out, the coronavirus could hit, or a war could start, or an economic crisis. You don't control everything, you know. That's vanity. That's what vanity looks like. And that's, you know, that's not something we can control. Those are good life lessons to have if I want to look at it from an optimistic point of view.
So just wrapping things up here before we cut you loose here, because I know you got a lot of other things going on today. But just give us like a little bit of where Skillet's at right now. Are you guys working on new material? I mean, you just put out your video game. I mean, of course, you know, you got the song at WWE Legendary and stuff. I mean, so tell us, like, give us a synopsis of what's going on right now as far as the band is concerned.
Right. I think I'm asking myself that. Where are we at, man? You know, I don't really know. I mean, we do have a few songs that we had already recorded that didn't go on the album. And so I started thinking, maybe we should look at releasing those songs. Everybody's locked up. Everybody wants something new to do. Mm-hmm. That could be maybe a cool thing to do. So we're discussing if we should do that. Should we package that with some other things to give to the fans? One thing that I thought it's cool to give to the fans for free is some of the unplugged stuff that we've done, which I think that you mentioned at the beginning of this. Taking some of the Skillet songs and playing them on acoustic guitar or piano. Mm-hmm. It's kind of quite fun. It gives people a different look. And that's something that costs the fans no money. All they got to do is check out our social media. That's an interesting thing as well. I've been spending some of my time, as you mentioned, I do a podcast for anybody that actually cares. It is called Cooper Stuff Podcast. That's my last name, Cooper. Cooper Stuff Podcast. And I talk about culture issues, social science, how it relates to religion and the way that I see the world, things like that. I've been spending a lot of time doing that. And I've just finished writing a book. I don't have a publisher, so I don't know when it's coming out, but I finished.
Really?
Yeah, I finished my book. And it's just about talking about finding truth in a world that is very relativistic. And people are confused about what truth even is these days. And even if there is such thing as absolute truth. And so I talk about that. And so Skillet right now is a little bit on hold, except that we're trying to give the fans some music for free on social media, and maybe we're going to package some of the other songs together and find a way to get it out to the fans, just to keep people not bored to tears.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean it's just crazy times. You know, it's unbelievable, but it's so great to see you and continued success and you know, one of the best in the business as far as I'm concerned, John. And thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, brother. It's so good to chat with you. Thanks for tweeting me about my record player.
And, it's so good to talk to somebody, by the way, in our own like kind of weather zone. I'm talking to, you know, Ellison or whoever, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's 85 in Scottsdale. I'm like, oh, come on, man. It's snowing here.
No, they don't know what it's all about, man. This is
Dave grew up not too far from where you are. So, yeah, you know, he knows a little bit about
snowing.
It.
You know, just snowed like 3 days ago, right? You're like, come on. It's the only worst thing about lockdown is snowing in lockdown. Come on.
Right.
At least get the backyard here. Anyway, it's good to see you too, man. Keep those workouts going, to keep those guns up, baby.
Yeah, got to keep the guns going. So, hey, man, really great to see you. Wish our best to your family and the band and everything else. So,
I will, man. Likewise. And thanks for everybody for watching. We appreciate it.
All right, Johnny, take it easy. We'll talk to you soon.
Later.
See you, brother.
All right, brother.
And there you have it. Another two for the price of one today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Hope you guys dug those conversations with the two great lead singers, two totally different ends of the spectrum. Of course, John from Skillet, Jesse from Jackal, just really good people as well. Both these guys, solid people. So hope you guys dug these conversations. I just talked with Bobby from Saliva. He's got a new project called Misery Down. Of course, he's going to finish out the year with the band. And then Josie, the lead singer from Saliva, the original lead singer, is going to hop back in 2021 to celebrate the 20th anniversary of one of their great records. And I talked with him, Sully from Godsmack, Michael from Volbeat, David Coverdale from Whitesnake, all recent guests on my podcast. Hey, guys, thank you so much for checking this out. We'll do it all over again real soon. It's Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. We do appreciate you guys listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.